Welcome to the Lyme Voice Network. We are chronic illness warriors, caretakers, and advocates who are overcoming illness in all of its many forms. We created this show to inspire, educate, and encourage you on your path to wellness. We're here to help you put the puzzle pieces of healing into place. Join us and our network of Lyme warriors as we discuss how fighting is a mindset, healing consists of choices, and living is the outcome.
Welcome to Lyme Voice Radio, where we talk about all things chronic illness. Lyme Voice is brought to you by Invita Medical. Over the last 20 years, Invita Medical Centers, located in Scottsdale, Arizona, has become a proud leader in precision-based chronic Lyme disease testing and treatment. From advanced CLIA, validated next-generation sequence testing for Lyme disease and co-infection identification, to treatment of all primary and secondary co-infections using patient-targeted anti-infectious therapy, immunotherapy, and the elimination of infectious neurotoxins. Invita's highly trained medical team and facilities provide the latest in research-based precision for the treatment of chronic Lyme disease and tick-borne associated infections, helping to transform patient lives for the better. Call to speak to one of their patient care coordinators today to see if Invita is right for you.
Hey, everybody, this is Dr. Diane. I'm so excited today for Sarah Slichty Sanchez to be with us. Sarah Slichty Sanchez is an entrepreneur, an author, a speaker, a podcast, and a radio host. Recently, she was ranked the most popular Lyme disease podcast by listennotes.com. And the aim of each episode on her Lyme Voice podcast is to encourage, educate, and inspire people who are living with and battling complex chronic illnesses. Since recovering from Lyme disease, she has created the Fight, Heal, Live coaching program. She's authored a children's book she's going to tell us about later on about Lyme called Little Bite, Big Trouble, and filmed a 17-minute documentary about chronic illnesses called Disappearing from Society. Sarah appears weekly on the WGLRO radio station talking about chronic illness, Lyme, and the power of mindsets. And today we are going to talk about habit stacking. So welcome, Sarah. I'm so glad to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I already told you this, but I just love talking about habit stacking. And I'm so excited to talk about that during this summit. It's just such an important aspect of recovery.
It really is. It really is. And like you and I were just talking offline, like so much of the focus oftentimes is on supplements or medications. And today we're really going to talk about with habit stacking, it's really how you can take these things and have success. So let's jump right in. And can you start by just telling us a little bit about some of the strategies you've implemented to get around some of the physical and cognitive and financial obstacles even that you face? Tell us a little bit about how you in your own life have gotten into habit stacking.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a very brief synopsis of my journey with Lyme disease. Much like everyone else, it consumed my world for many years. I lived with excruciating pain that we could never figure out where it was coming from for 7 years. By the time I did get a diagnosis, I had actually gotten infected when I was 18, had a bullseye rash in New Mexico, but had no clue what it was, and no one around me did either. So I went through a slow decline for 17 years. And for me, after a car accident, I just lived with excruciating pain, migraines, fatigue that no one understood, didn't make sense. And so I am now at the point when I finally got diagnosed in my mid-30s, it had been 17 years since I had been infected. So I'd gone downhill, not knowing what was going on. And so it was in 2013 that I finally got a diagnosis and started putting the pieces together as far as what I needed to do. And I actually went out to a clinic out in Scottsdale that has a lot of neurological repair programs because I was completely debilitated in a wheelchair, having multiple seizures a day, struggling to walk between the bedroom and the bathroom, not even functioning. And we rented a house near my parents for help. I have 5 kids and they were young at the time, and we just needed help on so many levels. So 2013, I remember being at the clinic and I had been new to Lyme. So being at the clinic was validating for me because I saw people mid-conversation forget what they were saying or slump over in a pile of fatigue that didn't make sense and could last for 10 minutes or 10 hours. And so I'm getting this education of like, oh, wait, same as everyone else. Oh, I finally have a diagnosis. I know what's going on. And then you're like, oh, crap. I don't even know how to find a practitioner. Like, what do you mean? Like, this is years. And so I remember just being, I could not work. I could not think. I was having seizures and excruciating pain and having literally people taking care of me or making meals or driving me places and realizing I am feeling so broken and so wounded and so out of gas and realizing I'm just at the starting line. Yeah. Like this is the beginning of my journey. And so I think one of the things that transformed was I had so little to give that a tiny little habit was all I had. So it came in different forms. I mean, I went through treatment and did the whole thing everyone else does where you're on IVs and on antibiotics and taking dozens of supplements and altering your nutrition and all that stuff. But for me, it was tiny little things. Like after so many years of wearing pajamas, I like chose one day. So many of us can't even bend over to put on or change clothes, or you're wearing a robe because it's the only thing that doesn't hurt every part of your skin and your body.
Yes.
And so just choosing like, okay, I can't exercise, but instead of wearing pajamas, I'm going to get up every morning and put on, for me, it was yoga pants and exercise clothes. And it was just like one tiny step after the other of tiny incremental things that, okay, here's where I'm at. It's not where I need to be, but I'm going to make this tiny decision and then just walk that out as best as I can. And they matter. They all add up over time.
So how were you? I'm curious initially, because one of the things I think it's so hard, as I imagine you find in some of the Lyme clients that you work with and people that listen to your podcast, one of the things is like having sometimes the motivation to even do the tiny habit, because even going to the bathroom can be so difficult. So when you were in this, as you were realizing these tiny habits were super important and even getting out of a robe, these examples you're giving, well, how were you motivating yourself to do those small little things?
Gosh, that's a great question. And I don't know if it's about motivation, right? Because you're right. People listening to my podcast are trying not to die on their couches.
Yeah.
And I get messages probably like you do consistently of people saying, and they are dying. They're fighting for their lives. So I don't know that it's about motivation. And I know motivation gets lost when I'd seen a meme that showed like a chronic illness person sitting in their bed and it showed the foot of their bed like 100 feet away. Because it feels like that. It feels like getting up and going to the bathroom is this gigantic effort. And it is, because your cells aren't operating properly and your body isn't processing things normally and your muscles aren't working. So you do have to put forth effort. But for me, and I see this with coaching clients, it's people who want to live.
Yeah.
That's the motivation. I wasn't living. So I call it fight, heal, live is kind of my three phrases that I've come up with to identify my journey. And fighting is a mindset, healing consists of choices, and then living is the outcome. And the outcome for me was I'm existing.
Yeah.
I'm existing and I don't want to stay here. And I'll give one example that it has just been so profound for me because it was a little moment and it didn't take hardly any energy, but I was crawling into bed. It was before I had a diagnosis. And I owned a real estate brokerage. And so I had been at home for years working from home from my bed because I had horrible neuropathy. And even though they kept telling me it wasn't really neuropathy, I'm like, well, I can't, my legs quit working part of the day. And I would have to sit with them up elevated, sometimes 90 degrees for a couple of hours before the sensation or before the pain would ease enough. And then I had the ability to get up and walk and do dinner. And I was sitting there, and I've been an avid reader, and I was fortunate enough to be able to read through most of my journey, but I was at the point I couldn't even hold a book anymore. Yeah. And so I'm crawling into bed for the umpteenth time at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, knowing I'm going to have to be there. And I kept trying, just like all of us, different things like, oh, if I rest every other day, and if I plan a rest day after a day of activity, like then I can navigate what's going on in my body and not understanding it. And I was past that point. I couldn't make sense of it. I couldn't allot time for it. I was just, when that wall of disabling utter fatigue would hit, I would have to stop and I would have to put my feet up. It didn't matter what I wanted to be doing. So I'm crawling into bed and I'm watching Netflix. And I was telling myself, I wish I was the type of person who wanted to watch Netflix. Right? Like we all have couch potato friends.
Yeah, totally.
People who are like, oh, I have a day off. I'm curling up with Netflix and not going anywhere. And I'm like, in that moment, I wanted to be that person because it would have eased the reality I was living in and had been living in for a long time. Yeah. And I simultaneously thought in that moment, okay, if I'm going to have to be here, that was my option, was watching YouTube or Netflix or something. And I said, okay, if I'm going to be here and I'm going to be stuck, I'm going to learn something. And I quit watching dramas instantly. I love documentaries, but I really didn't watch a lot of documentaries just because you feel all that energy and you feel the negativity if you watch a crime investigation series. And so for me, I just shifted to saying I would watch some history stuff because I wanted to keep my cognition and I was forgetting everything. So I thought, okay, if I watch some history stuff, but not the dark stuff, which is a lot of history, but I just started shifting. If I'm going to be in bed, and that's when I started watching a ton of the health documentaries that really like the Gerson protocol. I ended up implementing the Gerson protocol, which is juicing and coffee enemas, for 3 years, 6 days a week. And it was it had a profound impact. And I still to this day do Gerson in maintenance mode. And so it didn't require any energy of me to sit and watch different shows when I was in bed, right? It took the same amount of energy, but it gave me energy in new ways that I hadn't experienced. So that's just like one example of what do you do when you can't do what you want to be doing? Like, okay, what can you do? How can you create some level of freedom within the constraints that you have?
I love that you're sharing this so much. I have a patient in particular I'm thinking about right now who is just, it's just this classic story. So bad off, like driving, sitting, staying, everything hurts. Like it's just very limited life, but yet he is always still in a good mood. And so I was asking him one day about his strategies on this. And it's basically like what you're talking about. It's like his strategy was focusing while he was healing. He was still trying to change his life. He didn't want to stay, doesn't want to stay in the spot. But while he was there, it was focusing and making these tiny little shifts like you're talking about, where he is focusing on, okay, what can I do today? If I can't do a lot, let me focus on some little thing that I can do. And it might be a simple thing as if we're watching Netflix all day, how can I get something out of it? So I love, love, love that. And I think it's really important to also make it clear for people that this is not saying we're going to do that and still not focus on healing. We're just doing right. Both. So I love that. I know something you have mentioned too is even another simple habit that you really implemented was really with making your bed. So why do you find like making the bed? What is this habit about? Why is that so important, do you feel?
Oh, I love this question. It's such a simple thing. Like my mom is super neat freak and house organizer lady. And so she would always, being teenagers and stuff, always be like, why don't you make your bed? Just make your bed. I'm like, Mom, it doesn't matter, right? I think I kept some of that as an adult. Like, did it matter? I don't know. Like, okay, yeah, if I have time, but it wasn't necessarily something I did, like even when my kids were little. Now, I also dealt with chronic fatigue because I'd been sick my whole adult life. So there was different factors in my productivity or what I could choose to do. Mm-hmm. But once I lived in my bed for multiple years, and my bed was, I like so many people listening, I had a tray and my laptop and my water and my supplements. And I just lived out of my bed and ate out of my bed for a solid like 4 years, 2 years before treatment and then 2 years afterwards. But making my bed to me is just this symbol. And I talk about it all the time to coaching clients that it's a symbol for me. I remember not having the energy to walk around my king size bed more than one time. Like, and I've said, like, I would make the bed, but it would be like, just pull the sheets, pull everything up, put the pillows there and walk away. I didn't have the strength to walk around. And so now being at a place, and it was just one of those little things, is I am going to wake up every day and make my bed. And I, at whatever level I can. And for a long time, it was just pulling up the bedspread and calling it a day. But eventually I got to the point where I could walk around the bed and tuck in the corners and fluff up the pillows that I'd been tossed on the floor. And so as part of my just daily habit routines, I actually spray a Mrs. Myers spray. I make the bed, I spray this Mrs. Myers spray that just freshens the whole room. And it's a statement to myself. And I started saying it out loud before I could do it, that a bed that is made is a bed that doesn't intend to be laid in. And I just love it. And so even now, even when it's been a long time since this has been the case for me, but if I do need to lay down in my bed, I lay on top of the bedspread and I use a blanket. And it's just like this act of, I'm here and I'm resting because this is what my body needs, but I'm not actually here.
You're actually giving me full body chills right now. Like, it's so powerful, the little mental shift on a subconscious level, what's happening by these things. It's like telling the subconscious, I am like working so that this is not going to be my life anymore.
Yeah. And eventually insomnia was one of my major things for years. It still is. It's actually one of the medications I'm still on. I will twitch at night, that neurological twitch that bolts you awake multiple times a night. So it's hard for me to stay asleep and it's hard for me to go to sleep. And so if you're not sleeping, and I genuinely did not sleep for like a decade, it was the worst. So if you're not falling asleep till 3 or 4 in the morning, you're not necessarily getting up to your alarm either. At this point, I was fully disabled. And so if I didn't sleep, then I would get my kids out the door onto the bus and then I would go back to sleep. And if I had to sleep till 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. or 1 p.m., yeah, especially early on in my recovery, that's what I had to do. And that was, I would tell myself, the best use of my time and energy is to rest. Like, I'm going to do this. So you're controlled by, you really are controlled by so many factors you can't control. But I just got to the point where I said, okay, I'm going to set my alarm, whether I can get up to it or not. I don't know, depending on the night and how things went, but depending on that day, I started setting my alarm for 01. So 7:31, 11:01, 8:41, whatever it was, I would just set it 1 minute ahead. And so when I would wake up, because I'd been looking at the clock through the insomnia eyes, like, oh my God, it's got to be morning, right? And it's like, no, it's 3:20 in the morning. And I'm like, crap. But if I would set my alarm for 01 and I would say out loud, one step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And I still do it to this day, one step in the right direction.
Yeah. It's celebrating the small victories. And it's also giving the brain the neurological feedback that this is working, which is so major when every tiny little step with this stuff feels like a millimeter.
It does. And it does feel insignificant sometimes to say, okay, I'm operating at 60% and I probably don't get to connect with my kids as much as I want to. And I am isolated from my friends and family, but I made my bed this morning. It yeah. doesn't seem like a huge deal, but it's one of so many. And whether that plays out into other areas of your life as well, where you're like, okay, maybe I didn't take all the pills I needed to take. I didn't swallow all the supplements that I needed to take, but I did do that coffee enema and I did juice and I did connect with my kids. And so then the day following, start with that one thing that you weren't able to do and the whole self-talk thing. Louise Hay has been a huge inspiration for me. She has a book called Heal Your Life, and it matters. It all matters. And I think we tell ourselves, especially I did, I grew up in a very religious environment where self-care and what you need is secondary to everyone else's needs. And part of that's cultural upbringing and different things. But I had to learn to give myself permission to just take care of myself. Even if that meant, okay, making my bed doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but it's powerful and it means something to me. And it, like you had said, it means I'm here, but I'm not stuck here.
Yes. Hello, friends. Today's podcast is brought to you by these sponsors. Urbane Medical. Urbane Medical is a boutique ketamine infusion center located in sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. They provide a hospitable environment rather than a hospital environment. They're eager to accommodate your family in any way they can during your time of healing. Ketamine can promote a sense of well-being, decreases brain fog, and reduces chronic nerve pain. I interview the owner, Jonathan, in episode 109 for more information. I can attest what a therapeutic environment they offer at Urbane Medical. And Jonathan Evertson, the owner, makes you feel safe and comfortable and also has some really fantastic playlists available upon request. I have seen with a number of my coaching clients that ketamine is a game changer on a number of levels. So if you are in the Scottsdale area, check out Urbane Medical. All right. Now on to the show.
Yes. And you're bringing up something else that I think is super important that we cover, which is when you're talking about making the bed, when you're talking about doing these protocols, these various protocols you're doing, and sometimes we get it done, or sometimes it's like, you're just pulling up the sheets because you can't even walk around the bed. And I think when we're talking about how so many of us have these cultural conditioning types of situations, there's so many of us that have like this perfectionism mentality. And that can come up when we're trying to heal from all of this. So when we're talking about some of these tiny habits, like what advice do you have for people around this working with the perfectionism versus like the persistence and the regularity and the self-care and the self-forgiveness if we don't do it right? Can you talk about like that and how we can work with this concept of persistence versus perfectionism when it comes to truly implementing some of these daily habits?
Yeah. So James Clear, the author, he just does a great job of talking about implementing daily habits and how him and so many other successful people, even the founder of McDonald's, I was just watching that movie, The Founder, and he says, we were an overnight sensation 30 years in the making.
I actually just watched that movie last week. It's so interesting.
Yeah, me too. Maybe. And I love it because it's so symbolic. I think the hard part, a big mental block for me, obviously, and so many people, is not knowing what's wrong, not having a diagnosis. Then you get a diagnosis and you're implementing so much, and you have very little oftentimes to show for your efforts. Whether it's you just spent 20 grand on the next step of treatment, whether it was 5 grand, whether it was a complete diet overhaul that you're dragging your family through and all that stuff, it's easy to want. I'm not even a perfectionist person by nature. I'm not, but I want to do things right. I want to be effective. I want to get an A. And I felt like for so much, you're putting in A plus effort and you have very little to show for it. You're like, life is handing you a D minus over and over again, because you can't make your bed. You can't clean your car. I remember one time being at soccer practice or dropping my son off for soccer practice. And it was the semester before I had to actually pull him out of soccer. I could not even drive to the 3 practices a week anymore. So I'm there and I'm watching him and I cannot get out of the car and go walk across the field anymore. And it was all I could do to get him there. And again, like you said, driving was hard, getting in the car was hard, and he was young. And I opened the door, child locks on it. So I get out of the car and I open the door for him to get out into this soccer field. And I'm in the parking lot and trash is like falling out of my car. And I'm looking at this trash falling out of my car, and there was no way. The car had not been cleaned. I had 5 little kids. If I didn't tell them to do it for me, it never got cleaned. And I just remember thinking like, hey, buddy, okay, like I'll be here for you when you're done. And just like literally not being able to pick up the trash off the parking lot. And I was like, this is not who I am. That's just what I remember thinking. This is not who I am. Even though my car has been trashed for like 7 years now, this is not who I am.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to be giving what you have to give continually, expelling huge amounts of time, energy, and money for an illness that no one in your life understands, an illness that attacks random organs, so your symptoms fluctuate, and to not talk critically to yourself, to not say I'm failing. And so for me, that's Louise Hay has just been this enormous inspiration to say, no judgment. I'm not judging myself. I'm not going to do it. And I don't have it down. And I would actually say it probably took a couple of years, but I'm like, no, I'm not going to talk negatively to myself, because what's the return on that?
Yeah.
I mean, you're big energy.
Negative return.
It's a negative return.
Yeah.
Even if it's true,
yeah.
Even if it's true that I'm a disaster and my car is a disaster and there's trash falling out of it. That is true. That's actually what's happening, but that's not who I am. That's not the way I want things to be. And I can't go clean my car right now, but I can make my bed. And I couldn't do that 2 years ago.
Yeah. And in that example, I am here showing up for my kid and focusing on the wins, the things we are doing, the things we are still doing right in the middle of feeling like we're a disaster.
Yeah. So perfectionism versus persistence. And then so many of the authors in the self-help world, and I was in the entrepreneurial realm before getting sick and still am, but it's persistence.
Yeah.
If you can show up, if you are only operating at 60%, but you show up with that 60% every day, at the end of the month, you're going to have something to congratulate yourself for, whether all you did was cross off. I mean, I remember call the neurologist and schedule the next appointment.
Yeah.
Don't call the neurologist and schedule the next appointment, whatever phase of treatment you're in. But sometimes it was just simply, okay, I did two things. I did three things today. And I tell people all the time, like, you have to be your own best friend. No one can do that for you.
Yeah.
When you're isolated, I mean, yes, put people in your life who will speak to you for sure. Put authors in your life who empower you. They've saved my life. Like, but you have to be your own. You have to be your own hero.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'm curious, and to take it to the next level, like one of the things that I think is super common is, and I know this was for me, I had to work on this so much, was the identification as a sick person. And there's like patterns that we get into in our mind. So how do you think when like you're talking about Louise Hay and her work and mindset? And so how do you think when it really comes to coming out of remission, staying well, how do you think that's related to like actually changing these old thought patterns and beliefs?
Well, I think your book highlights
so
much of it, using your mind to heal all these aspects of our lives. And yeah, I talk a lot on Line Voice about fault versus blame.
Yeah.
Or fault versus responsibility. It's none of our fault that we were bit. I was an 18-year-old on a camping trip. It was not my fault that from that point forward, I ended up having migraines that would put me in bed for 2 days every month. All this stuff has happened, but much like a kid who falls off his bike and breaks his arm, that's not his fault either, but it is his responsibility to go in and set the bone if he wants to recover.
Yeah.
And this journey with chronic illness and specifically Lyme, because of the neurological aspects that come into play, it's very easy for your new normal to be deeply abnormal. So you address that in your book. Dr. Joe Dispenza talks a lot about it, where, okay, you may be in this situation financially, emotionally, physically. What can you do? What can you focus on? And that's such a huge part of it. And I think even there's so much healing that happens when there's just an awareness of something. An example for me, when we rented a house for 4 years, we rented a house near my parents, and I would walk up and down the hallway, and I had POTS so bad that if I bent over at all, I would either pass out, which I've done tons of times in my journey, or would just be so disoriented and lightheaded that I couldn't, I mean, I'm talking like bend over to tie your shoe, not happening. Putting my foot way up in the air so I don't have to bend over, because I didn't want to be lightheaded and dizzy for the next 10 minutes. So I remember we're just walking down my hallway, and I have little kids, and there's just toys and stuff everywhere. Cause if you were not robo mom and picking up constantly with five little kids, like, you can sneeze and the house is in disarray. And I remember just walking down, and I couldn't bend over. And so I would just push the toys over to the side of the hallway to just like make sure there was a path, somewhat safe, not really, but it was all I could do. Cause I'm like, I can't bend over. If I bend over, I will be immobilized for the next 10 minutes. So it's not worth bending over for. So for me, I have had so many dysfunctional patterns of behavior that have come out of that. So I'm not joking. After I went through treatment, POTS like was one of my symptoms that went away pretty quickly. But I would have to tell myself, I would say, don't bend over for, I think, like 3 years after being able to bend over, I would tell myself, don't bend over, don't bend over, don't bend over. And I would say out loud, like, no, it's okay. I can bend over. Right? Like that's, yeah. It's so simple. It's so simple, but it's not, because I heard that voice in my head dozens of times a day. That's not normal.
Yeah, it's not normal. And it sets up our neurological system for more like sympathetic dominance, for that adrenaline rush, for that state that's not healing by thinking things like that.
I've never heard that term, sympathetic dominance. What does that mean?
So sympathetic dominance is really where our autonomic nervous system is, depending upon which theory you use. But one way of looking at the autonomic nervous system is sympathetic versus parasympathetic. So sympathetic being the flight, the adrenaline, the over excess of cortisol, all of that. And when we are in that state, when basically the part of our nervous system that is pumping out adrenaline is the predominant part of our nervous system, that's what we're calling sympathetic dominance. And the problem with being in sympathetic dominance is all of the signals for our body to heal, to repair, a lot of those signals are shut down. So when we're doing this and you're telling this story around like, gosh, just saying over and over again, don't bend over, don't bend over, don't bend over, on some level, what's likely happening, we'd have to run some lab work to see, but what's likely happening is there's almost like a PTSD type of situation of remembering what it was like to be so fearful of having these pot spells and ending up on the floor, and there's the adrenaline. And yeah, that's why I think some of what you work to bring awareness to people around online voice, around mindset, is super, super important, because largely from a physiological perspective, what we're doing by talking about this is we're keeping the nervous system in that state where it can heal.
Wow. Yeah.
Big.
You're right. It is big. I love that. Sympathetic dominance. Yeah. Yeah. And you don't even realize you're in it. I mean, one of the, I really value at this point in my life, pondering things and not just meditating. Like I actually do meditate. I have a meditation practice a few times a week, but just thinking about things,
yeah,
thinking about, oh man, I heard that quote and it kind of stopped me in my track. And what was it that like drew me in? And even that quote from the founder that we both watched last week, when he said an overnight sensation, 30 days in the making, I just stopped to think about that. And I love doing that, because for a long time, the loudest voice in my head, and this has taken me years to undo, the loudest voice and the only voice in my head for a while was stop the pain, stop the pain, stop the pain, over and over again. It was excruciating. It was neurological. It was causing seizures. It was in the depth of every bone and joint in my body. And it consumed. I mean, I was with my grandma one time and she hopped up off the couch. She wasn't quite 91. I can't remember exactly how old she was. I think she was just before her 91st birthday. And here I am in my early 30s, arthritic and decrepit, and it takes me 2 minutes to get up off the couch to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, what is happening? Right. And so to be at a place which mindset and those daily habits have just incrementally moved me forwards towards healing, to be at that place where I can hear myself think again.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's such a treasure.
It is to be able to witness. When we can witness ourselves thinking, we can start making better steps with actually changing how we're thinking. And like you said, it's years. I think that's one of the most important things to emphasize here is this is like, sometimes I think when it comes to working with the mind, people can get so frustrated around like, oh, I'm never going to get control over this thing. And really in the reality, we probably never will get 100% control over it. But who learns to ride a bicycle or play the guitar or learns how to do anything like without a ton of practice? So it's just like any other skill.
Oh, it is. And I think that especially if you like, my parents are both really healthy and really active. And so for me, it was, I didn't understand. And my dad was a pastor. And so they were very ministry oriented. So you're continually serving others or considering others' needs. And I didn't understand self-care. Because it was something in a sense, like I didn't know, as just growing up, I grew up in this very religious community. I didn't know anyone who went to the gym, like growing up. I did as an adult, yeah. But in my culture that I grew up in my experience, going to the gym was selfish or not a good use of your time or money or vain, maybe. So to prioritize self-care was a completely new concept for me because I had high functioning parents who just took care of themselves by waking up every day. And so it was really weird for me to have to put all these new boundaries around my life. And I mean, like I said, when I went out to Invita, that was in 2013, I was there for 2 months and then came home and implemented their at-home protocol for 2 years. And it was 6-7 days a week, constantly 60 supplements a day, 1 to 2 enemas a day. And then I also implemented the Gerson protocol. So I juiced every day. And I remember looking around and being like, God, my life doesn't look like anyone else's I know. And then being like, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. I don't know anyone else who does this. I don't want to be doing this. My daughter, I think she was like 6 at the time because she was in school. My youngest daughter, she wrote me a Mother's Day card and it's like the fill in the blank where it says my mom's favorite color, my mom is how old, all these different things. And it says my mom's favorite activity is, and she wrote juicing.
Uh-huh. Wow. It says so much.
And on one hand, I was like, oh, huh. That's sad that she thinks that's my favorite activity because it's the only thing she sees me doing. But on the other hand, I'm like, yeah, I'm fighting for my life.
Yes.
And you should too. And I can tell my kids that all the time. You do what you have to do. You figure it out. Yep. You have to practice. Yep. And self-care, I would have never thought was a skill set. And especially when you're consuming 6 to 7 hours of your day and most of your life for multiple years. I mean, it's a hard thing to stomach. I have a coaching client. Most of the coaching that I do is for people coming out of Invita because that's the clinic that I went through. And so they have a ton of support when you're there, but the at-home program, and they have a ton of medical support for people afterwards, but the whole transition, and this is where I love coaching the most, is when people have come out of an intense treatment program and they're in the restoration process. And we know, right, that takes a couple of years, usually at least.
Yes.
And when you're having that conversation with someone who doesn't understand this or is like, oh, why am I not better? I'm like, I try to tell people all the time, you're not going to be better. Maybe you're reducing symptoms and that sort of stuff, but you're not going to be like, oh, here I go. But that transition is so important because you're undoing all that sympathetic dominance. You're undoing, I've had one of my clients just ask me last week because she's not doing 2 coffee enemas a day and she's not in treatment full time. And she goes, well, what do I do? And I was like, you rest.
Yes.
She's total type A personality. So yeah. She's like, oh, give me a list. Let me tackle it. And I'm like, yeah, resting is your priority, but it's through the rest, it's through the pondering, it's through reorienting all those neural pathways that you start to undo some of the dysfunction. I mean, one of the, you mentioned my book, and it's a children's book called Little Bite, Big Trouble, and it's on Amazon, and we're giving it away here during the summit. But I wrote that book. There were so many times I was just weeping. I was out of pain. I think I was after treatment, I think I was functioning at maybe 60%. And you can live a lot of life at 60% if you haven't had that, but you also want so much more. And sometimes I know it was a lot of PTSD and grief. I know there was a cumulative grief unfolding for me, but sometimes I just couldn't stop the tears. And sometimes I would just turn a movie on. And so if my kids came in my room, that was one of the things, I did leave my door open all the time. Not when I was having seizures, there was a few months in there, but I could do so little and I really needed them to come to me. So the only tiny habit that I could do to be open to them was to literally keep my door open. And that's what I did as often as possible. And so I would, if I was just tearful or whatever, sometimes I would have to shut the door, but I'd just be like, hey, come on in. Like, I'm just watching this movie and it's making me sad or whatever, to try to distance the trauma that I was going through from being part of their reality. But I had just decided, I'm not going to cry myself to sleep anymore. Finally, a proven and comprehensive Lyme protocol with no antibiotics, no potentially harmful therapies, and no outrageous prices or hidden ongoing costs. Lyme Laser Center uses their unique, technologically advanced laser system and their numerous other supportive technologies to help you gain control of your Lyme disease and overcome the often debilitating effects it has on your body and your life. With a completely free in-house consultation with a Lyme laser specialist, it's easy to learn more about the Lyme laser protocol and how it can help you overcome your Lyme. Start healing your body naturally. You can hear all the past episodes of Lyme Voice at www.lymevoice.com. You can also hear new episodes here on the WGLR radio every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Central Time. Lyme Voice is also available 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, wherever you get your podcasts from. Give Lyme Laser a call today and tell them Lyme Voice sent you. And I don't know if it was 2014 or 2015, but I had given myself permission. I mean, I tell my kids, it's okay to cry. It's okay. You just had a seizure. Your life is falling apart. You just lost your career, your identity. It's okay to cry. I didn't explain all that to them, but and it was, and I had given myself permission to cry and to grieve when I needed to, but there came a point where I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to cry. And if I need to cry, I'm going to write instead.
Beautiful.
And it was the week that I made that decision that I wrote that book, Little Bite, Big Trouble. And it's the story of a mama bird with five little baby birds. And one of the cute, fun things about that, there's 3 tan birds and 2 chocolate colored birds. And I have 5 kids, 3 biological and then 2 adopted from Ethiopia. And so there's 5 little birds in the nest, but they're all different colors because it represents my kiddos. So
that's such important topics to talk about. I think, and it's not, I think these types of topics around like, how do we work with our families? How do we work with our kids? These aren't topics that are like spoken of in this community enough. So it's really exciting that you're putting that sort of work out there. And like you said, we are raffling that off for people in this summit. So excited about that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think one of the things that comes out of coaching is just that people's family members and spouses either get tired of hearing the details or they don't understand the details and they want to. And I've gone through this with my family extensively to where my mom's like, hey, how was your week? And I'm like, I don't know how to, especially when I was sick, I'm like, okay, yeah, I am better and I'm not in pain. But I could look back. I tell people not to look back over a month. Like you kind of have to look back over a whole quarter or a semester to say, because healing is not linear and because it cycles and because of bacterial infection, life cycles and all that stuff, like, okay, you might've conquered the bacterial and now you're dealing with the viral infections that are going on. Like, oh yeah. So I do feel better. I'm not in pain, but I also feel like I'm running a fever every night at 5 o'clock. Like that's a confusing, it's confusing for the person living with it, let alone trying to articulate something you don't understand to people who have never dealt with a neurological issue. I'm like, I don't know, my left arm didn't work last week. How do you explain that? And so that's the thing of like, it's one, you get can get so trapped in the confusion of the illness. And then in trying to explain to your family members who are probably trying to advocate for you or support you in some way. And you're like, oh man, I don't even know how to describe what the reality is. And so that's the thing I've loved about coaching is it's because that mindset stuff just comes into play. Like, okay, I can bemoan the fact that I'm still not functioning the way I need to be functioning, or I can focus on like what's really important to me or what's really important to that coaching client. Cause for some people it's being able to leave their door open so their kids can walk in the room. That may be the thing they accomplished this month. It may be stopping the negative self-talk. Every time you hear yourself saying, I'm a failure because there's trash falling out of my car, say, no, I'm not. It's interesting. My very first physician who I sat in a 3.5-hour meeting with him and my dad, where he went through my whole health history out in Scottsdale. And it was the first physician I had talked to who not only understood what was going on, but like had a plan of how to deal with it. And it was just so relieving and refreshing. And he told me, I'm in my wheelchair. My dad's taking care of me. My husband and my mom are taking care of our 5 kids. And he says, Sarah, he's a big mindset guy. He goes, I want you to say, and this is like the first week I'm there, I'm having seizures in a wheelchair. He goes, I want you to start saying, I am perfect, whole, and complete just the way I am, which is
Louise, right?
So Louise Hay says that a lot. I mean, yes. A lot of people do. I know Landmark Association and stuff, they use that phrase a lot. I don't know who came up with it first, but so I'm sitting there. This was a huge moment because I'm in a wheelchair and I cannot walk. And he says, I want you to say, I am perfect, whole, and complete just the way I am. Like he was telling me way before I was ready to receive what he was saying about mindset.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I told him, I said, I can't say that. I'm not perfect, whole, and complete. I'm broken. I'm wounded. I am here. I just sold my house to be here in the hopes that I might see my kids graduate. Like I have no expectation of ever being free of pain, but I'm here because I'm dying. I don't know what else to do. I am not perfect, whole, and complete. And I can say that now, but it took years for me to utter that one sentence.
Yeah. And I think sometimes in the work I see, then in those types of situations, and I'm wondering if this came up for you and how you started working with the mind. Sometimes I think it's then like, well, what can my belief system actually believe that is a little bit better than what I am believing? So if I believe right now, if the belief is I'm broken, what is something that is moving the needle into a little bit better belief, but yeah, something where the body is like, this is not so far where I am that I'm rejecting it. Is that something you've played with at all, that concept?
Totally.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah. And so that's why little habits are so huge, or little mindsets of, okay, yes, there is trash falling out of my car, but that's not who I am. This is just where I'm at. Yeah. Those are huge. They're huge factors, but they come in such tiny little, and I didn't understand a lot of energy healing. I didn't understand how impactful your thoughts were. And just also not even, I was actually proactive and high functioning and determined. So for me, it wasn't like I had a bunch of self-doubt sitting there. I understand that I came into the situation with a sense of confidence and self-determination. Not everybody has that. And so that's a journey in and of itself. And it seems like, one of the things, let me just make a blanket statement that this all sucks and it's horrible. And I wouldn't wish it on myself or anyone else, and don't want to relive so many aspects of this. However, within the losses, within the suffering, there are so many lessons to learn about who you are, how you're functioning. Are your thoughts serving you? If they're not, like, how did you phrase that? You said your mindsets. I didn't understand how powerful mindsets were because I was healthy.
Yeah.
Right? Like when you can just be like, oh, there's trash falling out of my car, I'll solve that problem. Like I'll just go get the car detailed, or I'll crawl in the back seat and take the vacuum. Well, I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So I couldn't physically do that. So I had to learn to use what I had and just in a tiny incremental way, say, okay, this is where I was. I'm moving slightly more, putting on exercise clothes versus pajamas. It's tiny, but it leads to a lot because like you said, you're redoing your neurological pathways. You're transforming what you didn't even know had been broken sometimes.
So I know you created the Fight, Heal, and Lie and Live. Let me say that again. I know you created the Fight, Heal, Live podcast format and your coaching program out of your own experiences. So some of these tiny habits you're talking about, like one of the things I've heard you say is that healing consists of choices. And so when you say that, is that some of what you're referring to around these choices of, I will get out of my pajamas today, I will make the bed? Is there any other layers to this that you want to share with us?
Yeah, it's just the thing. It's actually one of the things that I valued most from interviewing people. And it started right away within the first couple of months of podcasting. And we've been running the Line Voice podcast for almost 6 years now. And it was so empowering for me to talk to authors and other survivors who had done tiny little incremental things, because I felt alone in that for a long time. I was isolated. I was surviving. I was implementing Gerson protocol and my at-home protocol, hours and hours a day, trying to raise my kids. I was alone in this little bubble of outside of like authors and self-help people thinking that these little choices could actually lead to some level of significant healing. And so the healing consists of choices part, and this is something I see all the time in my coaching, is that people make a decision about treatment, or I'm sure you see this in your practice. They make a decision. Okay. I'm going to go with this treatment center, or I'm going to follow this program. And then they're dealing with all that negative self-talk. They're dealing with all the neurological aspects. And so they're like, oh, I made the wrong choice, or they back out. And it's one of the things, like people who go out to Invita at Scottsdale, it's 2 to 3 months. It's very expensive. And I say, don't go unless you're going to follow through.
Yeah.
Like choose right now. Don't waste your money or your time. If you don't think it's going to work, and I've seen people sabotage their treatment centers or their treatment programs, and I'm sure you have, where they're 2 or 3 weeks, maybe even months in, and they're like, oh, it's not working. It's not enough. I made the wrong decision. And I'm like, no, all these treatment centers, and this is just my opinion, they all work. It's all people like you guys. Like, you are invested. You've had your own journey with Lyme disease. You have a medical background. You've developed a practice, medicine with heart. You're developing based on your experience and your education, and you are going to heal people based on that. People are going to get better just based on that. Okay, across the board, there's so many treatment centers. Will each treatment center work for each individual person? There's no way to know that until you walk the path. But if you start walking the path and you're hemorrhaging time, energy, and money, and then you're fueling your thoughts with this isn't going to work, or I didn't make the right decision. Oh my gosh, you're just sabotaging. And so healing consists of choices is just, when I started interviewing people who are healing, I'm like, yes, they have all made thousands of choices to go in the direction that they think is best. And there's no guarantees. That's another thing. I have talked to so many, about 40% of my coaching clients are the caregivers or the spouse of the person. And a lot of like older teens or young adults, and they get stuck in this loop of it's not working or it's not going to work. And I'm like, you just have to choose to say every day it's going to work. And I don't care if you're doing the only thing you can afford to do, which might be a coffee enema, cost pennies to do a coffee enema. You might be selling your house to pay for treatment. It's all going to work, because whether it stops your specific symptom or not, it's going to lead you towards that next step. It's going to open a door of opportunity, of healing, of understanding And knowing that and like trusting yourself, trusting the universe, trusting your own intuition, that whole like choice thing to me, I come back to it and I'm just like, oh my gosh, everything is about choice.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Yep. I agree more. Go ahead.
It is so empowering when you can wrap your brain around that and then implement it for your good. Okay. Those choices that I've made, like you said, if I think something negative of myself, whether it's true or not, like, okay, maybe I should have swallowed that last round of supplements. Okay. Whatever. Does not matter. It's the choices you make within that to say, okay, I've got this. I'm going to heal. I'm going to keep going. I had read a study, I forget now, a few years ago, and they were talking about eating a cupcake. And they were saying, and I'm sure you're familiar with this, like psychologically, if two people, the same person eats a cupcake and leading up to the cupcake, because they're trying to diet all day long, they're like, I'm not going to eat this cupcake. I'm not going to eat. This isn't good for me. I don't need the carbs, the sugar. I don't want this cupcake. I don't want this cupcake. And all day they think about the cupcake and then they eat the cupcake. The nutritional aspect, the psychological aspect, and even they said the calorie intake gets changed by versus the person who isn't going to think about the cupcake all day. So they basically at the end of the article say, eat the cupcake. If you're going to eat the cupcake, do it and say, I'm choosing to do this. And this is going to make me happy and nourish my tummy and blah, blah, blah. And then you move on instead of thinking about the cupcake all day, eating the cupcake, and then bemoaning the fact that you ate the cupcake and, oh, I need to lose weight and blah, blah, blah. So we can do the exact same action, whether it's something as simple as eating a cupcake, doing a coffee enema, implementing a new program, finding a new practitioner, and you can have vastly different results just based on your thoughts leading up to it, your thoughts during it, and then your thoughts afterwards.
100%. And there's multiple studies like that, that are showing various aspects of that. And even down to the fact that, oh, we can have these two different situations, measuring cortisol and some of these adrenal hormones, like throughout two different people or groups of people doing the exact same thing. But some people are thinking about it one way, some people are thinking about it the other. And we actually see hormonal changes that are more pathological based upon the negative thought. So of course, we're not saying everybody live on cupcakes by any means, but you know, the concept here really is like, it's the mindset of our choices. And the other thing you said that I think to bring this full circle earlier around this thing around like fault versus responsibility. And so many times it's so easy to get into this victim mentality. And it's so natural, right? Because like you said, like it wasn't your fault. You were a victim. You did get bit by a tick. You do have genetics for mold issues, whatever it is. But there is still that responsibility. And that responsibility is in this example, in your example of this presentation, really doing some of these tiny habits, making these choices, working on the mindset one moment at a time. And then when we fall off the wagon, if we have the cupcake, then just letting it go, because that's over. And what we can be responsible for is how our mind is, say, processing that information for the future. So it's so very well said. This has been such an informative podcast. I want, or a presentation. I want to make sure to let everybody know how to get a hold of you. So I know we are raffling off your children's book. And then Sarah does have her Lyme Voice podcast, which will be on her speaker dashboard, the exact link for that. Is there anything you want to let people know about what that podcast is and what you're doing on there?
Yeah, you know, we really focus on mindset. We really focus on the choices you can make. And I don't know if this is just part of my own journey or for my own continued growth and well-being, but I really like to talk about health and aspects of health, but not illness. And so I tell people, I'm like, yes, my podcast is Lyme Disease or Lyme Voice. And we talk about Lyme disease, but we're talking about the aspects and the parts that you can control, because there's so much you can't. And we're talking about those little things, those little choices that really do lead you to, at the end of Fight, Heal, Live, I talk about living versus existing all the time.
Yeah.
And it's one of, I'll be vulnerable here, and I've said it on the podcast a few other times, there's a couple of things I know that I fear in life. Like, it's actually not death. You walk hand in hand with death and you learn to be comfortable with it to some extent. You learn to deal with suffering with this illness, but existing instead of living is something I truly, I don't know that I would use the word I fear it, but I'm very cognizant of it because I don't want to do that. I don't want my listeners to exist. Those are the people who are emailing, who are laying on their couch, consciously choosing not to commit suicide. Like, it's a thing. And so putting yourself in a position where you are focused on living instead of existing, I think is just huge, and it saves lives. And so that's really what we try to do, is focus on the living, focus on the choices. And then I use the word fighting, but I mean it in, sometimes you do have to go to battle, but I just mean it in a stand up. Yeah. Advocate for yourself, believe yourself, feed yourself nutritious foods, give yourself good mindsets, and empower, surround yourself with people who empower you to do the same. And if you're not in those situations, okay, just start tweaking.
Yeah. I love it. So. I love it. Thanks for being vulnerable with us. I really appreciate that. And I think it's so, honestly, so relatable by everybody that's listening to this.
Well, I always love connecting with you. You and I have gotten to talk several times, and we always just keep going.
I feel like we could do this all day long.
We could, totally. I'm so glad you're doing the summit. It's going to be awesome.
I'm so glad you're part of it. And I want to make sure to let everybody know about the final thing, which is that your coaching sessions, you're reducing for people if they want to sign up. So we have that on your speaker dashboard too. Those are normally 125, and you're reducing that down for the listeners of this presentation to 75. And I'll have information on your dashboard about how they collect that. Anything else you want anybody to know about that?
So that coaching session that I'm offering, I've been doing it for years for people, but it's a way to just sit down with someone and say, here's where you're at. Here's all the stuff you're implementing medically, emotionally, where are you at financially? What can you continue to implement? But then it's just those little things of like, how do you as a patient orient yourself towards healing mentally and emotionally, and not get trapped in the depression, not get trapped in the anxiety. And for most people, it's easier than they think. They just literally are saying things like, oh, I've failed, or I'm not enough, or this is never going to change, or I should have done this differently. And it's like, that's not the point. The point is, how do we move forward? And so it's just reorienting your brain and your heart and your emotions. So it's, kind of like an emotional ER session to some extent, but it's super rewarding because it just empowers people to walk out their own power and strength. And it's just often been suppressed by the illness.
Yeah, I really hope that everybody will take advantage of this, because I feel like it is what you're offering is one of the key fundamental things in my mind that is missing in healing from Lyme and mold, is working with these types of concepts. So I'm so glad you're offering that. And I do hope people will take advantage of this. And thank you again so much for spending time with us today. It's always a pleasure.
Oh gosh, the pleasure is all mine. I was so happy to be here. I love your energy. I love your vision. Your book is fantastic. And your name, I mean, when I read the title of your book the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, I already like this girl. Like,
we knew we were
wrong. Yeah, because it is about medicine, and it is about the practitioner you're seeing, and it is about your geography and your finances. Those are all factors.
Yes.
But those things, if they're not serving you, they don't have to define you.
Yes, 100%, 100%. Yeah. Well, thank you again. And I just want to conclude with just reminding all of our listeners that if you have not purchased the summit, that we are using 100% of the proceeds for the first 2 weeks of the summit to put into a scholarship fund where people that can't afford lab tests and treatments can actually apply to use these funds to get treatment if they couldn't afford it. So it is pretty cheap to purchase. So beyond even just being able to watch the replays, I just want to remind everybody that is going to a really good cause to help people in need. And thank you again, everybody. And we'll see you soon.
Hello, friends. Today's podcast is brought to you by these sponsors. Medical Bill Gurus. The experts at Medical Bill Gurus are dedicated to innovative solutions for any medical billing scenario, which we all have in this community. Oh my gosh. With empathy at the forefront of their daily mission, Medical Bill Gurus is dedicated to being in the trenches with patients and raise awareness for the daily challenges facing them. From medical billing errors to raising awareness for their diagnosis, Medical Bill Gurus takes pride in speaking with patients every day and helping them find guidance on how to navigate our broken healthcare system. Their patient advocates are available to help reduce medical bills and assist patients with navigating a dynamic health landscape. I also interview Daniel Lynch, and founder of Medical Bill Gurus, in episode 111. In addition to helping you get money back from your insurance company, if you need help deciphering what health insurance provider to choose, and I have done this several times a year for years now, or you are looking for a clinic that is covered by insurance, they are a great resource for all things related to medical bills, figuring out which insurance provider you could or should have. They're an awesome resource. Again, I use them multiple times a year. Give them a call.
Disease is contrary to life. Therefore, wherever disease exists, life must also fight to exist.
Good job fighting, Lyme fighters. Keep it up. We'll see you next time.
Lyme Voice contains general information about medical conditions and treatments. The information is not advice and should not be treated as such. Okay, Lincoln?
Okay.
The medical information on Lyme Voice is provided as is without any representations, warranties, expressed or implied, okay?
Okay.
Lyme Voice makes no representations or warranties in relation to the medical information on this podcast. You must not rely on the information on this podcast as an alternative to medical advice from your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. If you have any specific questions about your medical matter, you should consult your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. And for you, you consult your parents, okay?
Okay.
If you think you may be suffering from any medical condition, you should seek immediate medical attention. You should never delay seeking medical advice, disregard medical advice, or discontinue medical treatment because of information on this podcast. Got it, Lincoln?
Got it.